Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We welcome in our buddy, the host of the Locked On Kings podcast, our man Matt George. Matt, you've been talking about how things have just been great the last 4 or 5 days, and you couldn't quite figure it out, and then you had this, well, dare I say, epiphany.
Yeah. Oh,
it was because the Kings have only played once.
Yeah.
That's cap. I know why it is. Oh. I know why there is this sudden, this burst of life in Matt George. It's not the wife. It's not the baby. It's not the Kings.
Definitely not the wife and baby.
No, damn.
It's definitely not the wife and baby.
They said it again. Damn.
It's Marvin Bagley. The fact that Marvin Bagley is playing well again, it has brought some life into Matt George.
You know what? It's the wife and baby. You're right.
Yeah. See. I think that's what it is.
He's playing,
I think,
and he's playing well. I'm happy. I'm about it.
I think subconsciously you're thrilled to see your boy Marvin Bagley doing his thing again.
My boy is a loose term, but I'll take it. No, I'm happy to see Bagley.
Raise your hand if you made multiple rap videos about Marvin Bagley.
It was only one rap video. The other was a ballad.
That's okay. That's very true.
They were both bad. But yes, I did make them. That was a different version of me, a different time. That's content that lives elsewhere that we don't talk about here anymore, right?
That's fine. Okay, but in all seriousness, Marvin is playing well. The team overall, over the course of certainly the last two games, are playing well. But really, they've won four of their last six. They've won four of the seven that Alvin Gentry has coached. And this is what Kenny and I were talking about earlier. You can do anything with numbers. 4 of 7 doesn't sound nearly as good as 4 of 6. So we can just chop off that loss and say 4 of 6. Of course, what stands out to everybody, Matt, is the two games that they lost were really, really bad. The Memphis loss and the Lakers loss, which leads us into tomorrow. The entire fan base is frightened, understandably so, because we're going against a 5-win Orlando Magic team.
Oof.
And they're doing so at home, which I'd have more confidence if this game was in Orlando for some reason. I don't know what is the deal with this team in winning basketball games on their home floor. Maybe it's the fact that they half the time that building is filled with the opposing team's fans, which I don't think they have to worry about too much. Orlando Magic game. I always look forward to going to games and seeing opposing fans come in because I'm looking for the most obscure, like, opposing jersey I can find. And I wonder which one the Orlando Magic is going to be. So I'll get back to you on what that is. But I don't understand the Kings' inability to win and defend their home floor. I know Alvin Gentry's been super frustrated about it. If we're talking about this team bare minimum making it to the play-in, and the hope is that the Kings would be able to host a play-in game, at this point, I think that might be a friggin' disadvantage for this team if they hosted a play-in game. Hell, we want two on the road. Let's go.
No, my. Look, man. I talked about it earlier. There is a world where on Thursday morning, we wake up, we're doing, getting ready for D-Lo and Casey. You're getting ready for Locked On Kings, or if you do it on Wednesday night, where after everything that's gone on, the Sacramento Kings could be sitting there like the ninth seed if things go. It doesn't even a lot of things that have to go right.
Yeah.
Timberwolves lose, Blazers lose, Kings win, and you're like in ninth. So it's another opportunity for this team.
So pathetic. Pathetic that we're so excited about ninth seed and 10th seed.
Excited isn't the issue. We're not excited. We're just looking at what's going on. Mm-hmm. But look, before we even get into being excited about the ninth, do you even believe that it could go down that way? These are the opportunities that have presented this team for numerous different times over the last few years, and they never cash in the money in the bank. Why is Wednesday going to be any different?
That's a wonderful question that I don't think anybody who has covered this team realistically has a legitimate answer to. You can't, like, we're going to be figuring out what version of the Sacramento Kings shows up against the Orlando Magic as soon as that game starts tomorrow night. However, the one piece of confidence that I guess I will give Kings fans is the Kings over the last couple of seasons have played really, really well coming out of time where they've had practice. Like they did so last season. I remember when they had back-to-back games in Memphis that were canceled because of COVID, I believe. Mm-hmm. And coming out of that, that was like where the Kings were struggling a little bit. They were floundering. They come out of that and they played really, really well in that game, won that game. And I think that started one of their best stretches last season. And then we saw the Kings get some time off. They come out in that second Clippers game, and they weren't really hitting shots, but they played well. Especially, they looked bought in or dialed in. I said it was one of their most complete efforts, like full 48-minute efforts that we have seen from this team so far this season. So with that expectation, I think the Kings get off to a good start against the Orlando Magic. Does that mean anything? No, because we see this team and their ability to collapse in one quarter and erase any kind of lead that they have. Mm-hmm. But I guess the confidence that I have with that game specifically, Kenny, is the Kings coming out of practice time, typically being able to build on that. And then in terms of looking at that 10th or 9th seed, I say it's pathetic and I roll my eyes because, I mean, the play-in's the play-in, so you'll take what you can get. But the fact that this bar is still so low and the Kings are scratching and clawing and fighting this hard and we're questioning so much their ability to reach that bar is an indication of this team and where they're at in itself. But, hey, you got to start somewhere, I guess.
I guess.
What do you think of all of these? You know, I feel like trade season is about to hit overdrive mm-hmm. next week when we get to the 15th. The Portland reports, the Indiana reports. Is there anything there that Indiana is the one that we've really been stuck on and we've been talking about? Obviously, Sabonis he's an incredible talent that would probably require the movement of De'Aaron Fox or Tyrese Halliburton, or, you know, certainly a player that you absolutely love. CJ McCollum is not an incredible player. Doesn't seem to fit the Kings, but those are two teams right now that look like they're going through absolute hell. At least they are through the media. And, you know, fans like us, we're just picking them apart. Hey, Lou, can we get this one? Can we get this guy? Can we get this guy? What do you think about those reports that popped up over the last couple of days?
And it's funny, D'Lo, to your point. Oh, can we get this guy? Can we get this guy? Sure, it's going to cost that guy, though. Oh, that's terrible. Don't do that. It's like, what the hell are you talking about, Kings fans? Your team is terrible, and you have to give up value to get some sort of value. Like, I still think the league is on hold for what's going to happen with Ben Simmons. Like, it still just feels like everybody's just kind of waiting. Like, once we get any kind of indication of what's going on with Ben Simmons, then I think chaos is going to start a little bit. But maybe that's changed now that the Blazers are doing what they're doing and Dame is putting some pressure on that organization to make some changes. But the reality is what I want from this trade deadline is the same thing that I wanted from Monty McNair this last offseason, which is I'm ready for a swing for the fences move. Like, I don't care about the fear of it going sour and the Kings missing the playoffs again and failing again, because they've been a failure for a decade and a half. Like, I'm all for Monty McNair, if whether it potentially costs him his job or it secures him his job. If Monty is calling about Sabonis, calling about Miles Turner, although I don't think, as much as I like Turner, I don't think Turner moves the needle that much, calling about CJ, calling about Simmons, if Monty's setting up to trade away a player that we love, like a De'Aaron or a Tyrese or a Davion Mitchell, which it doesn't make sense to me why there's so many fans that are opposed to trading Davion Mitchell for something of value. Then if that's the move, I'm all for it. I'm ready for it. I think that's what needs to happen for the Sacramento Kings really to make up any kind of significant ground, more than just scratch and claw their way into a play-in and maybe make it, maybe not. And then this offseason we're back to, well, who is going to be on this roster, who's not. Is this roster good enough, and who the hell is going to coach it? Like, at that point, we're pretty much in the same situation. So I'm all for Monty McNair getting involved. I want to see the Kings involved in any rumor, whether it's true or not. And I'm all about it. Like, I can't
just
wait to
lie
see
to Matt. He doesn't care. Yeah, just lie to him.
Absolutely. I'm about it. I want to see fake Woj accounts tweeting me. I'm ready. Bring it.
Okay. Don't worry. Kenny will find those.
I mean, they just come across my timeline. I get fooled sometimes. But Matt, so you would be good Sabonis, LeVert for Buddy, Bagley, Tyrese in a first round pick?
Yes, I would. I would. Oh, and it's not because, and people might call me crazy for trading Tyrese, and it's not because I don't have any love for Tyrese Haliburton. The Kings just need to do something, and they're not going to make a major splash move. And Domantas Sabonis is a good player. Like, I was thinking about this today. Like, if the Kings acquired Domantas Sabonis without trading away De'Aaron Fox, is Fox still the best player on this team in theory, or is Domantas Sabonis the best player on this team? I think it's still Fox. I think maybe it's 1A, 1B. It's pretty close. I don't know. Like, I think that move makes the Kings better. I don't know how drastically better. I'm okay with the Kings trading away Tyrese if it makes them better. I'm okay with the Kings trading away De'Aaron if it makes them better. I'm sure as hell okay with the Kings trading away Davion Mitchell if it makes them better and they get more of a proven talent. Like, as much as I like Tyrese, he's not proven yet. De'Aaron still has something to prove, even if he's gotten a max contract in the league. Like, Domantas is a good player. So C.J. McCollum is a good player, even if both of them haven't won a championship or anything like that. They've done a lot more than most of this roster has in Sacramento. So, absolutely, I'm for it. Like, I don't want the Kings to make a stupid move where they sell everything for, like, a one-year rental or anything like that. But be aggressive and try something, because what you're doing isn't working, and it hasn't worked for 15 years, even if Monty's only been here for 2 or 1.5.
Well,
do you think Tyrese can approach CJ level?
I think Tyrese could honestly be all around better than CJ. I don't know if Tyrese can ever be the scorer of CJ McCollum, but I think Tyrese can be the facilitator. And I've actually gone back and forth debating with myself, like, who would I rather give up, Tyrese or De'Aaron Fox? And I picked Tyrese because Fox I've seen more of, and I know what Fox is capable of. But if you were to ask me who's better between Fox and Haliburton at running this Kings team, and who do the Kings rely on more when they need to get a bucket and execute a set, it's been Tyrese Haliburton this season. So in comparing Tyrese to CJ, Tyrese is a significantly better playmaker than CJ McCollum is. Maybe not significantly right now, but I think he can be. In terms of a scorer, I have more faith in CJ, so that's where I would give CJ the edge. Plus, he knows what it is to at least make the playoffs and win at a somewhat decent level versus Tyrese hasn't gone there yet, but he's only in the second season, so that's not really fair. But I do, to answer your question, think in the long run, Tyrese can, not will, but can be an overall better NBA player than CJ McCollum is.
So would you make a move for, like, if it was the same thing I told you, Buddy, Bagley and Haliburton for McCollum and Nurkic? Did you make that move?
Oof. I heard you guys discussing this move earlier, and my hesitation with this is if Nurkic comes, what do you do with that one? I'm a little less interested in, because I just don't know how much better CJ with this core makes this Kings team. I don't think it moves the needle that much versus Domantas Sabonis. In my mind, has the potential to move the needle more, because CJ has always been a complimentary piece. And hey, maybe the Kings need a complimentary piece next to De'Aaron Fox. But also Tyrese can be that complimentary
piece. I think you need a complimentary piece at a different position.
I agree. Yeah, I think you need a four. Like, you need that wing, or that, like, who can play both that 3-4 spot. But I've also talked about this on a recent podcast. Like, I think the idea of trading Harrison Barnes is foolish unless you're getting I cannot refuse this trade package, which you're not going to get, because if you're trading away Harrison Barnes, you're trying to get someone at his position that does what he does. So, and you're not going to get something better for Harrison Barnes at that position immediately. So unless the Kings are trying to tank, blow it up, and don't care about winning anymore this season, trading Harrison Barnes away is a bad move. So if I'm trading a guard, one of my many guards that I have, or packaging some guards together, I'm trying to get someone that I can plug in at that 4 spot and don't have to ask questions anymore.
Matt George, Locked On Kings podcast, with us here on D'Lo and KC on ESPN 1320. Speaking of Harrison Barnes, he's been absent the last few games. Looks like he's about to return. How do you think that plays into kind of the dynamic of, you know, minute distribution? You know, whether it's, you know, Terrence, Buddy, you know, Mo Harkless, I think, is knocking on the door of a return. Your boy Marvin Bagley. Like, I think there's an interesting dynamic when Harrison returns that I'm anxious to see how Alvin Gentry handles that.
Can you make me a guarantee, D'Lo? Can you guarantee me that the same Terrence Davis of the last few games is going to be the Terrence Davis that the Kings actually get and not the one from earlier this season?
Yes, I can guarantee that, yes.
Perfect. Then absolutely, I'm on board. Look, I like
the I would rather bad Terrence than bad Buddy.
And that's where I was going, is I like the fact that Alvin Gentry has taken Buddy's minutes away or has significantly decreased them. And I don't think that's going to change when Harrison Barnes comes back. If anything, it's going to get a little worse. If I'm looking for minutes who are going to get minutes that are going to take it away, I love Chimezie Metu, but Chimezie's minutes are probably going. And that's before Mo Harkless even comes back. I love the idea of minutes getting taken away from Buddy Hield. Terrence doesn't have to play as much. He's certainly not going to start anymore if Harrison Barnes is back, unless they put Harrison at the four, which we all don't like. Or the two of you really don't like. I'm
really
okay with
like
it a little bit. Yeah. So, like, I don't care what the minutes rotation is, as long as the Sacramento Kings are winning and are putting their best team out there. And like you not so subtly alluded to there, D'Lo, Buddy Hield minutes is not necessarily the best thing for the Sacramento Kings at this point in time. It really hasn't been all season long. I'm okay with him having a limited 7 to 10 shots a game off the bench role in 20 minutes. He can certainly put up 30 shots in 20 minutes if he wanted to, but 7 to 10 is like that sweet spot for him. And we don't need to go beyond that, because he's not doing anything more beyond that, really.
Get him, Kenny. Get him, Kenny.
Look here, man.
Oh,
I'm saying there should be no minutes.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. And I've said since the summer, Damien, I think this is where you were going, pat myself on the back, said Terrence Davis been better than Buddy Hield.
Okay. Hey, but Terrence Davis was ass for the entire season until two games. And
he was
against the same opponent. Like, we got to see it a little bit more. Come on now.
He was. All I'm saying is, given the opportunity, and Terrence Davis has played well, to be fair, for like the last four games, like starting with that Lakers game in LA, played well there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Man. Hey, I don't know. I'm not saying that Buddy Hield is a bad player. I'm just saying for this group, Terrence Davis is a better player.
Well, and that's what I think is the key word there, this group. And we talked about this in detail last week. This group doesn't work together with Buddy getting a lot of minutes next to Fox and next to, they just don't work. Like, we've seen it enough times to know it doesn't work. So it's not so much it's even less of a Terrence Davis versus Buddy Hield debate who's the better player. It's who's the better fit with this Kings team? Who helps this Kings team win, gives them a better chance to win? I think Terrence Davis does, because Terrence doesn't need a multitude of shots to get going. He's not going to take 15 to 20 shots and not going to take shots at 20 seconds in the shot clock from 40 feet away for no reason. And on top of that, he can give you more than just three-point shooting, which is all Buddy Hield. I mean, and I'm trying to be fair to Buddy, because Buddy's a better rebounder, I think, than he gets credit for. And he's gotten better, not drastically better, but he's gotten better facilitating when he needs to. But that being said, he's still chucking up early shot clock threes and really shooting the Kings out of games. And I know you had this discussion with James Hamm yesterday as well. I have more faith in Terrence Davis being the right fit for this Kings team, not necessarily the better player, but he might be both.
Well, let that man future play.
I don't think that Matt gets that reference.
Yeah. What?
When we're finished, I want you to pull up.
Future's a rapper.
Thank you. I want you to pull up an interview with Future. Uh-huh. And then pull up Terrence Davis sound bites and try to figure out which one's which, because they sound exactly the same. And it blew our mind yesterday.
Well, he did it, because that's going to be, like we talk about Freeport Metu, they're going to start calling the man Future Davis.
I'm with it. Let's start it now. Future Davis, that's his
Future
name.
Davis.
What I wanted to push back on, though, Matt, was the line that, you know, Buddy can shoot 20, 30 times in his 20 minutes. Like, it doesn't matter. Get all of the shots you want to while you're in there.
Oh, no, I'm not saying he wants or he should. I'm just saying he is capable of
Okay. Yeah,
don't let him do it.
Okay. He's definitely very capable. But that used to be a way that we thought, though. Like, if you're going to put him on the bench, let him get those shots off on the bench. It's whatever. Just do it with that group. Now, okay, that didn't work. Like, that's a bad strategy. And whatever has happened in the course of the last few games, because, you know, and this will be the fascinating thing for us to watch, I think, whether it's Orlando, Charlotte, Cleveland, or just in the, you know, in the days and games to come, is what happens, because you're right. I get what you were insinuating there. Is Terrence Davis going to remain hot? How long is Terrence Davis going to remain hot? Will Alvin Gentry give Terrence the same leeway that Buddy seemingly got, maybe not necessarily from Alvin, but certainly from Luke Walton? Will Terrence Davis be able to miss shots and stay in the game and contribute in other ways, or at the first sign of, you know, 1-6, 1-7, or something along those lines? Do we see Buddy going from the 19 and 20 minutes that he's been in the last two games to being closer to the 25, 26, 27 minutes that we're accustomed to Buddy playing? And I also wonder, in those minutes, is it like a microscope of his shots? Because even in the 20 minutes against the Clippers, 19 minutes, I think it was, against the Clippers the other day, in 19 minutes, we've all looked at, I watched the game with the box score in front of me. There are more than one occasion that we've seen 6 minutes, six shots. Uh-huh. More than one. So the fact that he took seven shots in 20 minutes, and then I'm pretty sure he took single digit shots in the Clipper game before. Okay, there's something there, like something beyond reduced minutes, like something was said, something changed a little bit in his approach to the game, whether forced or otherwise, has changed.
Well, see, I think the big difference to me is when Buddy Hield plays big minutes, the Kings are reliant upon him to win games. When Terrence Davis plays big minutes, he's supposed to fit and be a complementary piece to help the Kings win games. I think that's the biggest difference. Is if Terrence Davis, I mean, you're not going to get 28 points or 23 points from Terrence Davis every night. If you get it every once in a while, that's a tremendous win. If Buddy Hield plays, he's going for 30 every night, and he's either going to get it or he's going to get 15 and shoot you out of a game. Like, or he's still going to get 30, but he'll score 20 points in a fourth quarter of a blowout. Like, that's how Buddy, the way Buddy is. So even if Terrence Davis is having a bad night, okay, you should be able to overcome that. Versus when Buddy Hield has a bad night, this team doesn't look like they're capable of overcoming it, because the game plan is, here, buddy, have at it. Like, that's basically, it seems like that's what the game plan is. I don't know if that was, like, that was the biggest gripe that I had with Luke Walton. I was far more Captain Save a Walton, as you guys know, than most were here in Sacramento. The biggest issue that I had with Luke Walton was the fact that from day one, even in his first season when he benched Buddy Hield and Buddy didn't like him too much, from day one, Luke Walton enabled Buddy Hield's shooting. Day one, he said, we want to shoot this amount of threes. I want Buddy Hield to shoot. No shot is a bad shot for Buddy. Every shot Buddy puts up, I expect to go in. And then that turned into this season. I want Buddy Hield taking more than 17 shots a game. Like, I don't know how the hell we got there, but that was the biggest problem that I had with Luke Walton, which I've seen corrected since Alvin Gentry is here. So I'll be the first to point that out and say that's a good thing. Buddy Hield is just, he's not reliable. And Terrence Davis, you don't have to rely on. And that's the difference to me.
It's a good call.
Yeah, I agree 100%, Matt. You know, I see it the same way. Like I said, Terrence Davis, I mentioned it yesterday. I said he's got a little buddy in him, right? Like, he'll take some shots. Just like, Terrence, for real? That's what we're doing? But I just feel like there's more ways that he can contribute, and there's other ways that he can get himself going outside of just sitting a three-pointer. Like, he'll attack the basket, get a layup, get a dunk, get foul, go to the line, things of that nature. He'll maybe sometimes just not even focus on it and worry about the defensive end and start getting into the passing lanes and play good one-on-one defense. And it's just, once again, it's more conducive to this roster and this group of players than what Buddy. Buddy may go to Indiana and do great things in Indiana, but it wouldn't, the way he plays doesn't seem to work here.
Casey, I will say the biggest thing that I need from Terrence Davis is to him to for him to play the defense that he played in both of these Clippers games without having the hot shooting night to encourage that effort. Like Alvin Gentry has talked about before, he said that the way the Kings play offensively affects their defense. For most good teams, it's the other way around. The way the Kings, or where the way you play defense affects your offense, especially for a team like Sacramento, who likes to get out and run and transition off of misses or off of quick outlet passes, passes and inbound passes. So if Terrence Davis can provide the defense that he was playing consistently, and it's not so much the results, because he got some really good defensive results, had some steals, had some blocks, just played the best defense I've seen him play. If he can do that on a night where he is one of seven, like there's no question he belongs in the rotation ahead of Buddy Hield. Like the debate is over. Right now it's still a debate. If he's able to provide that defensive intensity and effort on a night where he's not scoring, like shoe it in, it's done. So that's the biggest thing I need, KC, from TD at this point in time, in addition to the scoring, because anytime that I can get a 20 point performance from him, and he's capable of doing that on any given night, we've seen when he gets hot, the rim gets about 60 feet wide. That's icing on the cupcake at that point.
And I'll say this, he kind of did that already for you in that first Lakers game, where he was this offensive juggernaut, but he was out there guarding LeBron, you know, and making him work on the defensive end. And he only had 12 points isn't a bad game, but 12 points probably felt like 40 the way TD was going at that particular time. He's like, oh, I got 12, I'm cooking. But it wasn't this super offensive game, and he still brought that defensive intensity. So I agree with you that some nights that's just going to have to be his calling card. That's something that he will rely on every single night, is I'm going to bring it on the defensive end. And if I get my looks on offense and they go down, that's a bonus.
But KC, D'Lo, will he do it against Orlando? And what I mean by that is you did it in two games that you shot really well. You did it against the Lakers, and of course you're going to get up for the opportunity of guarding LeBron James. Mm-hmm. Will you do it against a team like the Orlando Magic, where it's not a sexy matchup if your shots aren't falling? Mm-hmm. That's the big question for me. And that's not just a Terrence Davis question. That's a Kings question in general. Will y'all get up and play as well as you're capable of playing when it's not a sexy matchup, or when you're not dropping 140 points on the Charlotte Hornets? I have yet to see it.
And you said, Matt, that it's still a debate right now. Like, it's not a closed book case for Terrence Davis. It's still a debate with Terrence and Buddy. And for my money, it's not.
Okay. And
not because to me, it's not Terrence or Buddy. It's just not Buddy. Like we know that it's not. Like it's not a question of whether it's Terrence Davis. It might be a question of whether it's Terrence Davis or it's somebody else, maybe not on the roster. But it's not Buddy. You know the results that you get from Buddy, unless, and maybe, you know, we're talking about, again, we're working off a short sample size. It's a weird stretch of the season where the Kings haven't played as many games as they usually would, and all we really have to work on are these two Clippers games. Well, it's not just the change or a potential change in Terrence Davis over these two games. It's the potential change in Buddy Hield, because you might have to, if Buddy Hield embraces this different role now that he has, we might have to evaluate him differently as a player. But the Buddy Hield that we've known, that ain't it. So it's not Terrence Davis or Buddy. It's like, Terrence, you've got a way to stay on the court and on this team before December 15th pass, and it's open market on everybody. And here's what you have to do. It's not just hit those shots. It's, you know, do what you're capable of doing defensively. And I think that's, this was just a weird time for there to be such a stretch of days with no basketball, because I have so many questions about the fact that they were able to beat this Clippers team. And it's really inconvenient for me. And all I'm thinking about is myself in this situation, and not those guys. Like, I have so many questions headed into, you know, this game tomorrow night. And yes, I've got this pit in my stomach for the Orlando game, just like everybody else. But then you've got the Friday and Saturday back-to-back, in which they're going to go against the Charlotte team. Who knows what they're going to look like? Kenny was talking about how talented they were without some of their studs. And then you've got the Saturday, second night of a back-to-back against for my money, a really impressive Cleveland team.
Yeah.
And a guard in Darius Garland who, if you aren't careful, dude's going for 30-plus against you.
Yep.
And so I think a lot of these questions that we've been asking each other for the last few days, we might get some answers here, too, over the course of the next, you know, four or five.
And I don't think it's a coincidence, D'Lo, that Gentry is making these big decisions and trying to figure this out. I think it's a blessing that the Kings have this many days off at the beginning of December. I mean, it's a blessing to get that many days off at any point, but especially in this month of December. And you two talked about this last week in great detail, the importance of this month of December, the amount of home games that this Kings team has, the amount of winnable games, which I always like to say with air quotes, because who the hell knows with this Kings team? We can't look at a schedule and say this is a winnable game or not, because it's the freaking Sacramento Kings. Who knows? It's a coin flip every single night. But in terms of, you want to be a playoff team, you want to not only be in the play-in conversation, you want to be firmly in a 9 or 10 spot, not on the outside in 11, hoping to catch fire and barely sneak in when it's all said and done. Like, get your work done early, and this month of December is a perfect chance to get your work done. So I don't think it's a coincidence at all that Gentry is making these big decisions and trying to put his best forward right now and trying to figure it out quickly. It wouldn't surprise me at all if he's feeling a little bit of pressure, not so much to lose his job or his interim status or anything like that, but looking at December going, hey, for me personally, this is an opportunity where I can coach this team to a really good month, get them into the best position that we've been in a long time. And that only looks better for me to actually get the head coach title, not the interim title, or get rid of that interim in front of my head coach title. I think this month of December is absolutely crucial. And this could be the perfect time at the expense of Buddy Hield. It could be the perfect time for this team to figure these things out. And I think not just this Orlando game, but the Cleveland game, this 3-game road trip coming up, this Eastern Conference road trip, I think is going to be really, really telling too, with what this Kings team looks like with back-to-back games or a lot of games in a short period of time on the road, how many changes they implement, especially when Harrison Barnes and Mo Harkless are back.
Big picture question here for you, Matt. What would it take for you to kind of believe this team? So, you know, they won 4 of 6. Nobody believes in them after winning 4 of 6.
Yeah.
They feel like that's nice. That's good. They're doing some good things, but nobody believes that it's a precursor to long-term success for this team this year. I don't have an answer on when I would, you know, start to believe that they are turning the corner or doing something real. It's just one of those things. When you see it, you'll know it. But what about you? Is it just as how they handle this month of December, or when to say, not saying, oh, they're definitely going to the playoffs or nothing, but just like, I like the way this team is playing. They look like they've changed. They look different. They look like there's real reason for optimism with this group.
I think my answer changes depending upon the different levels of belief. Like, when would I be quicker to believe that this team could be a play-in team before a legitimate playoff team. Like, a lot more has to happen for the Kings to be a legitimate playoff team in my mind than to sneak into the play-in, and then who knows at that point. But for a general just belief in this Kings group, it's not so much rattling off a 5-game win streak or beating really, really good competition. For me, believing in this Kings team is seeing them face adversity and overcome it. Like, consistently, not just on a night basis, but hey, get punched in the mouth, deal with a really, really bad quarter, or see those shifts start to happen. Let's say like 3 straight games, the Kings have the lead, and in the 3rd quarter, the opposing team makes a run. And we're in that here we go spot, right? And you've discussed this with Sam, the here we go, like, this is where the Kings usually fall apart, and this game could be a 30-point blowout in 20 minutes easily. When they face those multiple times in a row and overcome it and win those games, or figure out how to slow down that bleeding, or De'Aaron Fox or player X steps up and leads the Kings through that consistently, that's when I'll start to believe. Because I never, my thing coming into this season was always, I thought this team was going to be significantly better than they are now. I'm guilty of that overhype. But my question was always, I want to see what happens when this team gets punched in the mouth for the first time. Because we know how soft they were last season. And this season, they got punched in the mouth and they folded immediately again. So what does this team look like when they get punched in the mouth consistently? Can they consistently overcome it? As soon as they're able to do that, which I don't know if that's even possible this year, then that's when I really start believing in this team as a good potential basketball team.
And how about, can they play some consistent defense?
That's the other thing.
I mean, like, I think all of the frustration with the, you know, losses piling up is, you know, the fact that, in, you know, talking about trades and De'Aaron and body language and all of these stupid things. It's like, yo, didn't y'all promise you would be better defensively? The hell happened to that?
Got punched in the mouth. That's
I guess, boy, man, God, that team. Not that we need any help, but they sure made us look like asses, boy. Like, we, but KC, yo, this team is different. You see that? Yo, I know they lost by one, man, but they put that work in. You see them working on the day. Man, that was like four games into the season. That feels like 2 years ago.
Yeah, you remember how hype we were feeling after that Kings loss to the Jazz, the first one, the home opener? It was like, well, the Kings lost. Okay, the better team beat them in the fourth quarter. But did you see that Davion Mitchell strip on Donovan? Man, this team defensively is going to the moon. Oops.
It was just like, hey, they may not be going to the moon, but they ain't going to hell. Like, they're...
We were sitting up here saying, well, at least they won't get pushed around anymore.
Yes, exactly. And that was right before they started getting pushed around again.
Mm-hmm.
How do we do this, man? Gosh, being a fan of this team is frustrating.
It is.
And that's the thing, too. Like, it's not like there's no – that's the part that's the most frustrating about it. It's like, it's not like there's no evidence. Like, no, what do you mean? Y'all play defense earlier this year, this season. We saw it. The communication, Matt, we were talking about this earlier. Like, you know, you hear every player regularly over and over again, and this doesn't even apply to just this year. This goes back to last year, too, where they talk about, yo, we stop communicating when things get tough. Like, essentially what they've are is they've admitted to being front runners. Like, when things are going well, like, we're communicating, we're talking, it's vocal, it's loud. Oh, but when things get a little tight, we get punched in the mouth, we get pushed around, oh, we get quiet and clam up. Like, no, it's supposed to be the other way around. You're supposed to get loud when things are going bad. When the Lakers are making that run, you're supposed to start communicating, and they don't. And it's why, you know, so many fans have, and understandably so, have started to lean on just blow this thing up, because if you guys aren't communicating with each other yet, what's the point in all of this?
Yeah, I think that the fan response of blow it up is a drastic way to address what I think we all believe the real problem to be, which is that this team is not good. There are a lot of really good individual players who result to bad individual habits once the team starts to show cracks. Buddy Hield starts chucking up threes like he would in an open gym session. De'Aaron Fox tries too much iso ball. The Kings just try one pick and roll with Tyrese Haliburton and Rashawn Holmes, and if that doesn't work, then everything completely breaks down. Like, those bad individual habits are what this Kings team has the hardest time breaking, because they're not a team. They're not able to coexist and stay together in those tough moments. And that was the thing that Walton kept trying to preach over and over again. And no matter what, we win as a team, we lose as a team, this locker room's together, together. Yeah, I don't doubt that they're all friends and buddies and got along, but on the floor, that team was the furthest from together.
Yeah.
As soon as a crack started, they fell apart. Like, and it was every night. We could all see it coming from a mile away.
Check out the Locked On Kings podcast wherever you find podcasts from. You can find it on the Odyssey app, Apple, Spotify, Google Play. You could also find the D'Lo and Casey podcast. Catch up on anything that you may have missed. Matt, we appreciate you as always, buddy. And most of all, we appreciate you for listening or watching wherever you may be. Finally, game day tomorrow.
Whoa.
The Sacramento Kings versus the 5-20. Orlando Magic.
6-20.
Oh, is it 6-20?
No, it'll be 6-20.
Stop it, Matt. We are not thinking like that, Matt. Stop.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly. Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.